Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my co-pilot and navigator, Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Vitti, how are you, mate?
I'm very well. How are you, Mr. Plato?
Yeah, good. Our guest today is someone very special. A gentleman that's been on our screens and on our airwaves for many, many years. Makes him sound old. He's someone that Dave and I both know pretty well. In fact, if it wasn't for this stupid bloody lockdown, we'd be down the boozer having a few scoops. It's the one and only Vernon Kay. Hello, mate.
Like a motoring pirate.
Yeah. Well done.
Mate, before we start, tell me about this figure of eight mop malarkey.
Oh, well, it's a result of being in I'm a Celebrity in the castle in Wales. Jordan North was given the job of doing all the mopping and the sweeping in the castle because we were given different jobs, like every 4 days, I think it was. And he's mopping like anyone would with a mop, any amateur. I should rephrase that. Any amateur would mop with a mop, just basically straight lines, like Mr. Miyagi when he was painting the fence, up and down, yeah. Left and right. And I said to him, I said, mate, I said, you're doing it all wrong. He's like, what do you mean? I said, you've got to mop in a figure of eight. So that I used to work for Bolton Council. I did 18 months, 2 years working for Bolton Council as a mobile caretaker. And it's probably one of the best jobs I've ever had. And hand on heart, I mean that. And they taught us how to mop, how to, you know, clean the sinks and the loos and all that kind of stuff with an official technique using the right chemicals and blah, blah, blah. So the key to mopping is you do it in a figure of eight, because you need all the muck to remain at the head, at the front of the mop. So basically, if you mop in a figure of eight, you don't have to pre-sweep your floor. So what you're officially supposed to do is sweep the floor first, so you get all the big chunks of dirt out the way, or hoover your floor if you've got a vacuum cleaner, and then you do your mopping. But if you do it in a figure of eight, you kill two birds with one stone because you don't have to sweep up beforehand because you collect it all as you go. That's the key to mopping a floor.
Do you know what?
See,
who would know or would think that you would know that?
Yeah, there you go. You see, and everyone thinks that being a caretaker and a cleaner is like a second-rate job, but it's not. It's up there with the damn best. I'm telling you, I met some of the best people in tabards when I was working as a caretaker.
With some high vis on.
And Tabards isn't a nightclub in Bolton, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. No.
Now, listen, we have to ask you about the castle now that you brought it up. It's the ultimate, isn't it? What you've done, I don't know whether Tess is like this. Nick, my other half, is terrified of spiders. It's not an uncommon fear, but she hates them, right? So as soon as she sees one in the kitchen, whatever, literally running upstairs, can you go and sort that out? So I go down there with the gas bill and the pipe pot and go and sort it, right? Now, I would imagine that if you have any fears, or anybody in your house, whether it's Tess or the girls, have any fears, you've been to the ultimate place. Therefore, nothing must faze you anymore, whether it's rats or cockroaches or spiders or anything.
No, I think next time we go on a Spanish holiday and there's that odd cockroach that runs around, you know, on the floor. And
you're eating it, aren't you?
Get it. Ah, get it. I'm having that.
Tasty.
I'm having that. Well, we've got a squirrel problem in our back garden. So the squirrels, they eat our plastic. They've eaten our plastic wheelie bin. They've gone through the lid and to get to the food. And it was for the first lockdown. It was me versus the squirrels. Like, how can I stop these vermin getting into our bins? But then I think the second night of I'm a Celebrity, revenge was sweet, as they said. Right, tonight's meal it's squirrel. I'll have all of them.
Yeah,
I'll have all of them.
Rare.
Yeah, and people were like, oh, have you had it before? What's it like? I said, no, I've not had it before. But I hope the whole squirrel community sat around their telly watching me devour their brethren, because they've ruined my bins. There's garbage all over the garden, so I'm going to chow down. No salt or pepper, just straight in.
More to the point, Vernon, has nobody yet pitched the TV format of Vernon versus Vermin for Channel 5 yet?
Yeah.
Come on, that's a shoo-in, surely.
It's got to be Dave. Do you know what? Let's write that up and pitch that one, my friend.
Yeah. Right, we should talk cars. Enough about cockroaches. Let's talk cars, Vernon. Early childhood memories. What are your first thoughts when you think about cars? Is it back to your parents' cars when you were a kid?
Definitely. Well, me dad, you know me dad. You've both met me dad.
Yeah.
You've both met Big Norm, lorry driver. So the big guy was obsessed by anything that moved. Looking back, he's the kind of guy, he wasn't bothered how old a vehicle was. It was all about whether he could get a deal on it and whether it was value for money, how many miles it had done and what condition it was in. So we were constantly changing cars in our house. And I'm not talking, you know, we'd nip down to your local Lookers and get a new Range Rover or something like that, a Land Rover or, a Leyland. He was like, I got a new car. Well, what is it? Oh, it's better than the other one. Well, what is it? It's a Rover 200. And it'd be like this 6-year-old, 7-year-old Rover that would come up. He's like, what have you? Oh, it's awful, Dad. Well, no, it's a good deal, though, isn't it? I got 300 quid off the old one, put it on this one. It cost me nothing. It cost me 790 quid. I'm like, oh, my God. So he was always changing cars, and he's still like that now, but with motorbikes. He's always swapping his motorbike. So he was always swapping cars. So my childhood isn't really pinned on one family car. Do you know what I mean? Like, my dad had this car, my dad had that car. Yeah. We had so many cars sat on the drive that I can't remember any particular car that means anything to me, because we had a Peugeot 200, we had an old gold Rover, you know, the big one that was rounded at the back?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The classic Rover. We had one of them that we went caravanning down to Newquay.
And what was he like behind the wheel?
Oh, legendary. Legendary. My dad was lorry driving for, I'd say, more than 60 years, 65 years, because he was lorry driving when you didn't need a separate licence to drive a truck. And he didn't take a lorry driving HGV test initially because you didn't need to. He was driving for so long, and I never, never, ever heard him say the words, I've had a crash, ever.
Oh, wow,
never,
really?
Ever, ever. Yeah, touch wood. Never crashed a car, never crashed a truck. And I think one of the big conversation that I'll never forget with my dad is because I respected him for being a lorry driver and you know, going up and down the road and being so proud of him being a lorry driver, because he was proud of being a lorry driver. When it came to driving myself, he sat me down on Tesco's car park in Horwich near Bolton. And my dad never really gave me a life chat, do you know what I mean? He was never one of them, right, son, you're going to go into the big wide world and you're going to conquer all your fears and you're going to work hard. And he never, ever, ever sat me down and had one of them chats until I got behind the wheel. And he gave me the keys, and he did that dad thing where you hand the keys and then pull them back.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant.
He said, listen. He said, I'm having a serious chat with you. And I knew it was serious
listen.
Because...
The double listen yeah, and the finger.
And the finger
yeah.
wag.
Yeah.
The finger wag. He said, listen to me now. This is not a toy. And that's all he said.
Excellent.
That's all he said. But I knew what he meant.
Yeah.
Basically, what my dad was saying, I'm going to give you the keys to a vehicle that can kill people.
Yeah, yeah.
So no messing about. It's not a toy. Treat it with respect, and it will respect you. But whatever you do, on no uncertain terms, do you mess about in this vehicle. I passed my driving test. He gave me the keys to the car. I got done for speeding 6 minutes later. I got 3 points on the day that I got my licence.
That's brilliant.
And I got in, and my dad had nipped out to work to go and clean one of his trucks. And I'm not embarrassed to say this. I walked through the front door, and I burst into tears. I started crying. I fell into my mum's arms, and she's like, what's wrong? She thought I'd written it off because we had a Fiat Tipo at the time.
Oh, yeah, I may have remembered.
And it was amazing because it had a revometer and a speedometer that was digital.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember those.
Like
you're in, yeah, yeah,
it was
like Knight Rider.
Yeah, yeah. So I burst out into tears. My mum thought I'd knocked someone over or I'd crashed the car. She said, what's wrong? I said, my dad's going to kill me. She's like, why? I said, I've been done for speeding. She went, oh, bloody hell. Is that all? I'm like, no, you don't understand. Your dad's going to kill me. I was absolutely petrified at telling my dad that I got done for speeding. And I didn't get done again. It must have been 20 years. And ever since my dad said that to me, you can't be an idiot on the road.
No.
You can't. Because what you've got to realise is it's not just you. And this is what annoys me about when you see things on the road. And I'm not saying I'm the best driver, but I spend more time looking in my mirrors than I do looking at what's in front of me. Because my dad always said, and if you're going to learn from someone, you learn from someone who's got a wealth of driving experience in HGVs. He said, the road is always changing. if you're doing 70 mile an hour on a motorway, you're doing 70 mile an hour. You're not changing. He said, but if you look in front and if you look behind, it's always, always changing. So you need to assess your scenario and what you're in case anything happens. So that stuck with me as well. But yeah, Big Norm has had a massive influence on me and driving.
Well, do you know what? And it's funny when you say that, actually, and I never really thought about this before, but actually somebody like your dad and any sort of long-term, long-distance lorry drivers, because you've got a really privileged view of motorways, haven't you? Because you're sort of just gliding along, but you're seeing all that's good and all that's bad that goes on. You see exactly what happens when people drive too close, and you see all the braking and the tailgating and all that kind of stuff, bad overtaking, et cetera, people not using their mirrors.
You've seen actually, it all, Dave.
Yeah, I was going to say, more so than any of us, actually, because good you know, point. You've got that good high perspective on it, and you must see it and kind of go, I've seen this 100 times.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, with my kids can drive now. They're 16 and 11 and they can drive because it's not a toy. So you need to learn how to handle this piece of machinery because it's all well and good saying, yeah, I got a great car. Yeah, brilliant. But you put a weapon in the hands of an irresponsible person and it's going to cause chaos. So I see cars as, firstly, I see them as really dangerous objects. It's really weird. Honestly, I have this really weird mentality about cars because they are so dangerous, but yet they're so joyful and they're a massive part of our everyday lives. But I can't get away from the fact of how dangerous they are if they're put in the wrong hands or in the hands of someone who treats them with disrespect.
Well, especially like our age, Dave. You know, when I was growing up and my first car was a VW Beetle, I mean, you'd be pushed to do, you know, 80, 90 mile an hour and that thing, and it was slow as Christmas.
Yeah.
And okay, you have a shunt, it's a shunt, but even little small cars, first cars now for kids, man, they're quick, aren't they? Like three times as quick as what that, you know, a VW was back in the day.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because when you look back at the cars that we used to look at in awe, you know, and the XR2s and the XR3Is and a 3 litre Capri and stuff, when you actually look at the horsepower and the 0 to 60 now, any standard 1.1 little shopping car will kill it off the lights.
Yeah.
And it's the truth. We've actually, it's funny what you say about the kids, Vernon, because, you know, I've got a 13-year-old daughter, Nick Mother Half has got a 13-year-old son, so we've effectively got one of each. And we took them to one of these teen driving lesson things recently as a little present.
Brilliant.
So I thought, what do you do? What do you do for 13-year-olds? You know, they're not interested in anything, right? Because they're too old for this, not old enough for that. And I thought, right, we'll get them this driving lesson. And we went and we did it. It was absolutely fantastic. Really, and actually, just to see them actually in, because they're big enough, you know, they're big enough to kind of touch the pedals and stuff. But I thought, what a good life lesson to actually do on a Saturday afternoon at that age, so that, you know, the idea is that we'll do it again, maybe when they're 14 or 15, so that when they do become 17 and they are learning to drive properly, as we all did, they're halfway there.
Yeah, it's not all brand new,
exactly.
Is it?
We live next to a farm, so we're really lucky. You know, like, we say, come on, we'll go and have a drive. And we just sit in. Initially, they sat on my knee and I did the pedals and they just steered. And then you progress, you know, and now they can both do it themselves. But yeah, I think it's really important, firstly, to establish what a car is and how dangerous it is. And I think the old adage of put the fear of God into them, I think that taught me a really good lesson early on in my passion for cars and stuff like that. The beautiful vehicles out there and the artistry of being a racing car driver and all that kind of stuff. I think that's the romance of the automobile, really, isn't it? You know, but I think deep down it is something that can cause a lot of harm. On a lighter note.
How many horsepowers you've managed to wheedle into the Nissan now? Have you still got it?
Yeah, I've still got the Nissan GTR.
You've been forever tinkering and pottering and chipping it and tuning it. And
It was one of the first ones that Ian Litchfield at Litchfield Motors actually tuned up. He'd done all the testing on a couple of GTRs that he'd purchased, but mine was actually the first customer car that he built. And I can't get rid of it, Jason.
Yeah.
I honestly can't get rid of it. You know, I've been offered a few things here and there, and especially working with Dario Franchitti, you know, he's always got a deal on. So I've been offered a couple of things, but I just can't get rid of it because I've built it so it's quite personal to me. You know, it's bespoke to it's my car, it's my design. I put all the bits and pieces on it, I painted it how I wanted it, and now it's up to a manageable 958 brake horse.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Mate, that's insane, isn't it?
It is insane.
It's such a lot of grunt.
Insane. And it's usable grunt as well, because, you know, it's four-wheel drive and it's all the amazing technology that Nissan put in that car, how it disperses all the power to the wheels and what have you. But I've had it on track days, and I'm happy to say that there's very little up to like 50 mile an hour that can keep up with it. I mean, off the line, it's gone. Mm, and then you get the big boys, the Bugattis, who, once you get over 90, they've just got loads in there. Do you know what I mean? Like, all the torque kicks in and they're away. But off the mark, it's unbelievable.
Fern, give us the car history then. Give us the... I think we need to go back to the passing of the driving test, that feeling of freedom. Suddenly you can go out on your own, which is an amazing feeling, right? Yeah. And I will still remember that till my dying day. We're the same age, Fern. So 1991, I passed my test, age 17, and the first time you get in that car and there's no one else sat to the left of you, you think, it's just me.
It's a proper
this
moment,
This is the best thing in the world.
Not done for speeding.
So talk us through the car history then in order. From the first one, where do we go?
So Mum and Dad, as I said, had this Fiat Tipo, which I used a couple of times to and from sixth form with everyone in the back. And then I was working at Tesco's, and the lady who I did the cake aisle with, Maureen, she sold me. So I was stacking the cake shelves. She said, "Oh, I'm selling my car." I said, "How much is it?" She said, "It's 130 quid." I said, I'll have it. And it was a terracotta Ford Escort 1.3L gear.
Oh, no.
And I know I can remember the number plate. Yeah. RLF689W was the reg plate.
W, was that 1980?
It must have been, yeah. So it must have been 11-year-old, something like that. So, but it served a purpose. And then this is the weirdest thing. I loved that car, and my dad knew that I loved it. And I woke up one Christmas morning. It must have been Christmas morning, 1992. I said, I'll just nip round to a friend's house. I opened the front door. The Ford Escort has gone.
Yeah.
My dad traded it in, thinking he was great, traded in my car for a Mini... for a Mini, which was 5 years older than my Escort, that I couldn't fit in. So I said, and going back to my dad and his cars, I got a great deal on it, though. I got a great deal on it. I'm like, yeah, but you've traded in my car without telling me for Christmas. So he got rid of my car. I then had this Mini, which I hated, which was just downright rotten. Every time you accelerated it, it felt like a cut and shut. It felt like the welding had snapped in the middle, so it kind of creaked. It jerked forward. And then I had a Maestro. Then I had a Montego. I didn't have a car when I moved down to London. And then the first car I bought with my T4 money was a Jag XJ.
Was that the black one?
Yeah, the black one, yeah. The R series. I thought, I'll treat myself to a car. And that was another... Dad day, to be honest with you, because I said, come on, Dad, I'm going to go and get a car. And we spent a whole Sunday going around car garages.
Fantastic.
And he said, well, what are you after? I said, I want something different. I don't want the, you know, the jazzy whatever it is that people were driving, the stereotypical kind of sports car. I said, I want something with a bit of grunt, but I want something different. And I bought this Jag XJR. I bought it, and then I had it all de-chromed. Took all the chrome off it, or painted the chrome, so it was just like the Batmobile.
Yeah.
leather seats, and then had an ammonia injection system put into it, which would cool the engine. So I think I got an extra 200 brake horsepower out of it by tweaking it and putting this, that, and the other on it. And then sold that, and then got the bigger version of that. And then that's when I moved in with Tess, shared her car.
What was that?
She had a BMW, a little small one, I think the 3 Series. Well, that was a nice car. And then we moved in together, and I thought, I read this article in Top Gear magazine, and it was new cars for whatever year it was, I can't remember. It might have been 2005. Anyway, I bought a Noble M400.
Yeah. Great bit of kit, though, eh? Fantastic.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's like a Ford Mondeo engine.
Well, it was basically switching and everything was off the Fords, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a Ford Mondeo engine on a go-kart. That's the best way to describe it. That was a car you had to drive. You couldn't switch off. I mean, it was the kind of car that obviously, Jason, you'd sail around in, but us amateurs, Oh my gosh, you had to be able to drive that.
Yeah, but you could feel everything with yeah. it. I remember the first time I drove that car. It's a big step forward in everything that was available at the time, and it just knocked everything else into a cocked hat if you wanted a really great driving experience. But it was a bit hardcore, wasn't it? I mean, you go over a pebble and your teeth would fall out.
Well, like Dave, you know where we live, and we live near a massive roundabout. It's because the way the Noble was set up, it was quite stiff, I seem to remember. And you're right, Jason, you could feel every bump and every little pebble on the road. I ended up one time going round a roundabout backwards because as I went over the roundabout camber, so you know when you go onto a roundabout, the circular bit on the roundabout, I think is the best way to describe it, dips down. So there's kind of a camber as you go up to the junction and then down and around the roundabout. It flipped, it spun on me. And I thought, there's no one around, so what I'll do is I'll put it in reverse and I'll reverse off and then come back on. So as I'm going backwards around this roundabout, there's a white van full of builders. Now, you couldn't write this if you were a comedic writer.
Excellent.
Right? So I'm going backwards in this Ford Noble, which has got this massive big fin on the back, so it looks like I've ram-raided Halfords and taken the biggest spoiler I could find. And then as they're looking at me, thankfully I'm sat quite high in this Noble because I'm tall. I look down to kind of take a look up at the passengers in the white van, and they're all doing the Nescafe advert, handshake.
Magicking the beans.
As I'm going round. Maxwell House.
Yeah.
That was it. So as I'm driving round, they're magicking the beans from the Maxwell House advert.
Excellent.
So funny. But yeah, that was a car that you had to drive. Great fun on a track. I mean, my goodness me, that was some car. And then traded that in and got the Nissan GTR, and I've had it ever since.
And what's a sensible drive in the household? You must have like a sensible wagon.
Yeah, I've got a 220 Mercedes SL, the estate, and proper dad chat. It's ridiculously efficient. It does nothing. It uses nothing, honest to the gallon. We drove to France last year, there and back, and I filled it up 3 times. That's it.
Really?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's got 9 gears. You know, once you get going, it just puts itself into cruise control. And it tootles along at 80, at like just over 1,500 revs. You know, it's great. Absolutely love
it. But you've got all the AMG wheels and all the...
No, I haven't. I haven't pimped this one.
Oh, have you not?
No, I left it because I think Tess is sick of me just coming... Like she says, the GTR's never here. And she's right, it's never here. It's always at Ian's place because it's having something done to it.
It's
having an MOT.
For 6 months.
Yeah. Dear those MOTs, mind, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So I thought, well, I'll get this Merc and I can't touch it. I've not done anything to it. But, and this isn't an advert for Mercedes, but if you can find a car that's efficient, it makes a massive difference to your outgoings. It really does. And we're that age now where we're taking a look at our receipts. Do you know what I mean? Instead of taking them out your wallet and putting them... Exactly. Because what we used to do, let's be honest, we all did it. We used to just take the receipts out of our wallets, stick them in an envelope, send them to the accountant. Yeah. Nowadays, you take them out and you go, who spent 25 quid on chicken? Oh, my God!
But that's because we're all slowly turning into our fathers. That's the problem, because we've now got the age where I'll go upstairs and you kind of go, who's left the bathroom light on? Yeah. Right? Because that will really irritate you. Who's left this
who's
on?
Who's left big
who's
light
left
on?
The fan
do you remember that?
Yeah.
Who's left the big light on? I'm paying for that.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't want to do anything to that. Because it doesn't need anything doing to it. Do you know what I mean? I can get my golf clubs in with the golf trolley. I can go down to B&Q and buy an 8x4 piece of plywood. That'll go straight in there. you know, you can get 25 bags of compost in it. It's honest, it's awesome. And it's probably the fourth or fifth year that I've had an estate car. And I would never go back. I've even contemplated getting a truck. Just because you can put stuff in the back.
A pickup. I like those new pickups, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I mean, I've taken stuff to the tip that didn't need taking to the tip, only to fill
just
the estate car up. Yeah, because I can.
See, I've got an estate car, but I went to B&Q last summer and I thought, I'm going to buy myself a shed, right? So I bought myself a shed. I got there,
did
all
it go
good,
in?
Paid for it, came out on the flat trolley. Jason, it didn't go in by about a third of an inch.
Right?
I even took the door pocket things out the back.
Got
you know the little cubbyhole things and the little.
I hope you bought some bungee cords and strapped down the tailgate.
I stripped out as much of the car as I could, and it still wouldn't quite go in. So I embarrassingly had to ring my sister, who's got a car which is about an inch wider, and it just went in. And I said, "Ali, can you come and pick me up? I'm at B&Q in Reading. I'll see you in 40 minutes."
Gutted. Gutted.
But yeah, sensible cars, sensible cars. Can you see the day that you will become a completely electric family then?
Yeah, definitely.
Talking of being frugal and sensible.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously because I work with Formula E doing their global English language broadcast, I've kind of taken to renewable energy and everything that it means. Because I thought, if you're going to talk about it, you have to be in it. You have to live it for a while. And I managed to borrow the new Jaguar I-Pace when that came out. I had that for a good 9 months. And I tell you what, that is some machine. That is some machine. And what was interesting, you kind of... It becomes a game on how efficient you can make your driving. Yeah. You know, so going to and from London, you're like, well... Only used so much energy today, Tess, going to London. Really pleased with myself. And you find out where all the hills are and all the little bumps. So when you see, like, for example, a camber on the motorway, you think, do you know what? I'll use that to regenerate a little bit of energy. Yeah. So if I back off, I'll roll over the hill. It won't lose any speed, but it'll regenerate the motor, which will chuck some electric back into the battery, which will give me an extra 2 seconds of power. It's really, really interesting how you... mentally reprogram your driving skills and your driving techniques.
Had any proper range anxiety?
Yeah, once when I went, I think I was going to Bristol, and I'd mapped my route, which is what you have to, and I think I was like 500 yards short of the next charging station, and this is before rapid charging, and so you know you sat there for a good 40 minutes, but I just managed, you know, it's all going off, it shut itself down, it's not, the radio doesn't work.
What was it really? It was going into...
Heavy, it just gone into
going
extreme,
into lockdown.
Yeah, lockdown mode. And I got there in the end, but a friend of mine had a Tesla, and this is a really funny story, and they're down the south coast, she's got the kids in the back, and she's on this journey, and she's running out of energy, and she says, all right, where's the nearest charging station? So he's like, right, it's at Dover. All right, brilliant. So she changes direction. So instead of going west, she goes back east to get some energy, which will then enable her to continue her journey going west. So she goes down to Dover, says, hi, I've come to use the Tesla charging station. What Tesla charging station? So, well, look, it says here there's a charging station there. Oh, I'm sorry, madam. That's on the French side.
No!
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. She's got the kids screaming. She's no energy left. She had to phone Tesla to come and get her and give her a boost at the side of the road because the charging station was on the French side just as you go into the tunnel.
How funny is that? Have you had a go in any electric cars, Dave?
No, not yet. I haven't. And it's something I'd really like to, because, again, when you see things like Teslas, just the acceleration on them is just phenomenal see those things. There was a thing on Top Gear, I remember, a few years ago, and I think Rory Reid did a piece on it, and I think he was out in the States with all these big American V8 muscle cars, and they were sort of there all grunting and whatnot, and he just left them on the line.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So I would love to have a go. But as yet, I haven't, no. And I would imagine, Vern, as someone who's had like a long-term loan of the I-Pace or any, is range really the only sort of prohibitive factor, would you say?
Yeah. I've got to say, it's probably, I tell people it's the best car I've ever driven. It's on air suspension. It's got loads of power. You know, like you say, if you want to boot it, it just goes. It throws you back in your seat. It throws you back in your seat harder and faster than the GTR does, because the GTR is twin turbo, so it's got to build itself up. This thing's immediate. Yeah. This thing's right at you. It's like a punch in the back.
I must admit, for me, I was never into them, probably because I like a bit of noise.
Yeah.
But actually, the modern ones, I did an item the other week for fifth gear, and I drove the Taycan, the Porsche.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
I mean, I cannot begin to tell you how...
It's not slow, is it?
Oh, man, it is insane. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But drivable and comfortable.
Let's not beat around the bush. They've got to become cheaper.
Yes.
You know, if we want to be in electric vehicles, they've got to become cheaper. They've got to become more accessible. Charging stations need to be more frequent. because I've sat in a queue longer than I've sat charging at times. Especially in London, you know. But I think the next big movement is going to be the development of the battery.
Battery, yeah. And the infrastructure.
And the infrastructure of it all. Yeah, I think battery development is key. Now that they've got the general blueprint of EV mobility, I think that battery development is key. And it's interesting that battery providers in Formula E keeps changing. You know, I think it was Williams and now it's back to McLaren.
Yeah.
And it's just a constant evolution of electric cars. I think it's really interesting. And I think that the Prius is kind of set the benchmark, isn't it? You know, and now when you're getting a Prius, when your Uber's a Prius, you think, oh, God,
here we go. I mean, I absolutely hate them things with a passion.
Yeah, me too. But it worked. It made a statement. I think we'll look back at the Prius as a groundbreaking hybrid. Yeah.
I agree. I think it'll be one of those cars that will, you know, will go, if you think about automotive history in our lifetime, that will be a really, really key milestone, won't
definitely.
It,
I think it'll have the same impact that the Mini Cooper had.
Yeah,
you know, when that
so,
came
yeah.
out. That's an iconic car now. And a Prius, we laughed at it, we take the mickey out of it. It's the number one car for an Uber driver. But I think in 20 years' time, we'll think, do you know what? That car led the way for efficient motor driving.
It'll never be collectible.
Never be collectible, God no.
But mind you, you say that, I guess, but do you remember the beautiful Austin Princess? I mean, that's now a collector's
car.
Yes,
we had one of them. Norman had one of them. Got a great deal on a Princess.
Shut up, I know,
a bronze one. Yeah, yeah.
Norman,
I mean, the car.
Rich.
Yeah, yeah, we had a Princess. We had a bronze metallic Princess. Yeah, I think he must have had a good year in the hauling industry. We had a Vandenplaar, one of them.
Hey, that's a cracking brand name, that, isn't it? The Vandenplaar.
Vandenplaar.
God.
Right, what is your two-car fantasy garage? Can be anything within reason, but only two cars on the drive. What are they and why?
All right, so when I did a network show in America for ABC a while back, and I bought myself, or I had bought myself, an old Chevy Malibu. 67, sorry, and it had done 70,000 original miles, and I had it transferred from Florida to California, and it arrived, and I took it to the valet, and you know what they're like in America, when they valet. Oh my God, they do the inside and the outside of the bumpers, so they do the shiny bit, and then they take it off, and then they do get rid of all the crap behind it. So I had it valeted. It cost me about $225 for this valet, but it looked brand new.
Yeah.
And the experience of cruising down Sunset Boulevard in the 67 Chevy Malibu that only had an AM radio, and the only station it would get was 60s Rhythm and Blues. So I'm cruising down Sunset Boulevard listening to 60s Rhythm and Blues. It was like a scene from the Wonder Years.
Yeah,
right?
Perfect.
And every time I got in it and drove down Mulholland Drive, Sunset Boulevard, you know, all these iconic roads in this pristine car, it was just a surreal moment. So I would have an American hot rod in the garage, you know, not necessarily a Chevy Malibu, but I'd have something like an old 66 Mustang convertible.
Okay.
Just to live that kind of
Americana dream.
It was really special because I was on my own. You know, Tess and Phoebe at the time was just at home. And I just go out driving just because I could, because it made me feel so good just listening to old 60s Rhythm and Blues in this old 60s car that looked brand new. And every time you pulled over at a set of lights, there'd be an old guy and his wife, or an old lady and her husband. They'd wind the window down. Hey, man, I had one of those back in 67 just before I went to NAMM. And they're like, wow.
Yeah,
and there's one. It was cool. There was one time where we were at a petrol station, Tess and I, in Florida, and this guy said, oh, man, I used to have one of these. And Tess said, get in it. Take it for a spin. And he's like, what? And so he got in the driver's seat, I got in the passenger seat, and we just drove up and down the freeway, just one junction and back. And he had literally tears in his eyes.
No way.
As he's telling me like stories of him when he was a young lad, just before he went to war. It was stereotypical, everything you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Right. And I just thought, that's what cars do. cars are so, you get so attached to them, and they bring back so many emotions and so many feelings, and they just take you straight back there. Like, yeah. I remember pretty much every day turning up at sixth form in that old Ford Escort, RLF689W, and I can smell it now as I talk about it. So I would have an old American muscle car just for that. And then my second one, I've got to go for something with a bit of grunt. You know, I've got to go something with a bit of power, but I'm not going to go Ferrari or Porsche or Aston Martin or anything like that. I'm going to go with an old Ford Cosworth Sierra.
Oh, peachy.
Now, the Sapphire one, the Spender one, or the hatchback?
The hatchback, the legit full-on. Yeah, it's got to be, because I think that car, when it came out, it was the car that every lad wanted.
Aye, amazing.
It had loads of beans. It looked good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let's be honest, it looked good.
Oh, it was better than good. I mean, it was just the best thing in the world, wasn't it?
Like, Cosworth themselves, you don't realise that Cosworth were an engine builder.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, it's a Sierra Cosworth. Well, I thought Sierra Cosworth was just a version of the Sierra. I didn't realise that Cosworth had built the engine and put all the bits in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'd go for something like that, something quite nostalgic that meant something at that period of time that it was brought out. And I'd have it in blue, you know, the racing blue colours.
Yeah. I drove the one that's in the Ford Heritage Museum about a year ago. Oh, man, it was as good as I ever thought it was ever going to be, even to modern-day stuff. It was brilliant.
Yeah, which is a testament to how good it was back then. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mate, Dave, thanks as always, but a huge thanks to our special guest this week, Vernon, mate. Great stories. Great stories.
Yeah, that's what cars do, isn't it? That's
and
what
a cars safety do. Message hidden in there as well.
Yeah, they're not toys. It's not a toy.
Well, that's about it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share the podcast on all your socials.
So, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time. Ta-ra!